Hello everyone, welcome to episode 160 of the Laura Horn Art Podcast. They are certainly adding up. It's been quite a while that we've been podcasting, and I realise now that it doesn't matter that we've covered topics in the past. It's always good to revisit ideas and talk about how things are affecting us in our creative lives at the moment. So last week we had our season starter after having a break, and I have to admit when I listened back to it, I did think that it was a little bit pessimistic to start with. And I think I was having a little bit of a tough day, and I was talking about how there's so much pressure to do all these different things as an artist. And it's great to have this platform to be able to talk through things and be very honest, because not every day is a great day as an artist or as a human. And sometimes we have those days where things feel harder, and I was having one of those days. But fortunately, as the conversation progressed, I found the answer through talking about it, and the answer really was in getting into my studio, making art, painting, and finding a good creative flow. And it really reinforced to me the therapeutic benefits of being creative and finding something that you love, and how that can get you through some of the other less enjoyable aspects of life. So I just wanted to say that it wasn't the cheeriest of episodes, but since then I've been feeling really good, and I have been getting into the studio more regularly. And of course, when you get into the studio more regularly, things do naturally start to flow, and one thing leads to another. But what I thought we could talk about this week is what happens when you've had a significant break from your art and you've been quite disconnected from your creative process for some time. And that, I feel, is like one of the most difficult times. It's hard to get back into something when you've had quite a big break. It feels daunting. It feels scary. It feels really overwhelming, because where do you start? So that's the topic today, and it is coming from a question that we had. So last season, someone wrote in and asked this question, and so this is the episode that we will cover it. The first thing I want to say, though, is breaks are really good. And even though you might not realize it, your creativity is always ticking away in the background. And sometimes taking a break from your art is the best possible thing that you can do for yourself, for your family, for your well-being. And it's important to acknowledge that and to understand that your creativity will always be there for you to tap into when the timing is right. And in my life, I've had years and years where I didn't make art. And then when I did have that time again, I was able to jump into it. So it's always there, and it's great, because art is one of those things, or creativity is one of those things, that it actually just sort of bubbles away in the background rather than it diminishing. It doesn't leave you. And it's not like a garden where if you don't tend it, it dies. Or even friendships. Sometimes if you leave your friendships for too long, they sort of fall away and it's really hard to reconnect with them. But creativity, it's amazing how your creative life can change overnight. So you can be plodding along in your life, not doing any art, not doing any sketching, painting, or whatever it is that you love to do. And then one day you can just see something. You might go to maybe an exhibition, a workshop, talk to someone, or maybe you're just scrolling mindlessly on Instagram or Facebook and you see an ad for a little art class. And you go, you know, what the heck? Why don't I do that? And the next thing, you are on this roll. And that's what's so brilliant about it.
Yeah, a lot of the artists you interviewed for this podcast, there was always this, I was creative at home. My parents were creative. I was introduced to painting in an early stage of my life. And then life gets in the way. We get married, we get jobs, we go to university. We go out into the world. But then you come back full circle, and that for whatever reason, that creativity is reignited. And now as an adult, you have all these painters who are painting.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a common story, and it has reinforced and encouraged me during times when maybe I haven't been able to be so creative, that there are always times ahead of me where I'll be able to get back into it. So I just wanted to mention that breaks aren't necessarily a bad thing. And I think we can be really hard on ourselves if we haven't been creating, if we feel like we are meant to be a creative person and we've had this massive break. So I do want to emphasize that it's okay to take some time out to tend to other things in your life. And sometimes it's very, very necessary.
If you label yourself as a painter, or you label yourself as a potter or a sculptor, that's what you are. So if you don't do that, you'll think that, oh, I'm failing because I'm not painting. Whereas if you label yourself as a mother or a wife or a husband or a father, then painting is what you do. It's not what you are. So you can take a break. I'm not saying there's nothing wrong with saying, yeah, I'm a painter. But what happens is, like, if you get an injury and you can't paint, or for whatever reason something happens and you can't paint, then you lose, you feel you're losing yourself because you've labeled yourself as something that you cannot do.
I think the problem with this is the labeling, defining yourself as one thing when we are all many things. And we go through different seasons, and we might just be in a season of something else, but that doesn't mean that that other thing has gone away. It's still there. It's still part of who you are. So it's really important. It really comes down to being compassionate, being kind to yourself, and realizing that we live in a very wobbly, and there is always so much going on. And even with the best intentions and the best setup, and I feel like I'm in one of those very privileged situations. I have a studio close to home, I have time, but still there's just so much going on. There's kids, there's, you know, all sorts of things to factor in. Pets. Gosh, we've had a week of pet dramas. I won't get into it on the podcast, but it's crazy how something as seemingly small as, you know, your dog having a bit of a, you know, unhealthy, a reaction. She got sick. And then the cat, we had some dramas with the cat as well. So last week, just so much time got gobbled up with these things. And if you can't relax and breathe and just sort of roll with things, it can get really, really hard. So I wanted to make that point because it's important. But let's get into the conversation around that you've decided, hey, I really want to get back into making art. How do I go about this? And I'm just going to talk through some of my experiences, and then we'll see where the conversation goes. And I also really loved some of the comments and tips that you made last week about the ingredients of a flow state. So we might get into that as well. But first of all, what I have found when I've had a big break and I get back into something is that the most important thing is to just start somewhere, because the creative process really informs itself. So it's through actually making things that we then get an idea, we find something else that we want to explore, and we begin to go on a path. But if we're not actually putting paint on paper, or we're not filming videos, if you're a videographer or making films or whatever it is you do, writing a book, if we're not putting words on the page, we haven't got anything. We haven't got anything at all to work with. So the first thing is just get something onto a page. Get an idea out. It doesn't even have to be a great idea. It doesn't have to be something that you are necessarily going to fulfill long term. Just take your very first idea and start doing some work. Sketch in your sketchbook, paint, join a class. Just let it be easy, accessible, fun, and begin. Once you begin, you're probably going to go through a stage of jumping around a lot. You might start something and then you'll see something else and you go, oh, I'd love to try that. That is a very natural thing that creativity wants to do, especially if it's been starved of the opportunity to play. And so it wants to play. It wants to try new things. It wants to read books and take classes and go from acrylics to oil paints to anything. Working on cardboard, making films, videos, everything. It just wants to play because that's how we played when we were children. We didn't just fixate on one idea and do that endlessly. We went from Lego to doing something on the blackboard to painting to getting all our toys out. We naturally just moved through different things that were enjoyable and fun. And sometimes we'd get obsessed with something for a while and we would do that game or do that thing for a few weeks. But isn't it funny how we would then just move on to something else and it would be forgotten? And that's a natural way that creativity wants to move through the world. And in order for us to tame it a little bit, we have to bring in some thinking as a human or decision making. And that's something that we have to decide that we want. But if we just want to play, that's fine too. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. And if you are planning on just enjoying your art, having fun with it, there is no problem with going from one thing to another and bouncing around. The measure of whether that is a good thing is really just how enjoyable it is for you, whether you are feeling satisfied by it, whether it's rewarding. If you are feeling like, oh, I'm not really getting better at anything, it feels a bit chaotic, I don't feel like I've built skills, then there's an element of dissatisfaction. And in that case, I think it would be time to choose something to focus on. So that's the next step. So we want to get started. So my advice would be to make a quick decision, make an easy decision, have a look at what's out there, hop on Instagram, hop on Facebook, maybe go to your library. Just look at something that's out there that you can do that's easy and accessible, fun. You don't need too many supplies. Just get started. Maybe go on to YouTube and follow a couple of artists that are really inspiring, depending on what type of art you make. A couple of artists that I really love to follow on YouTube who I find make me want to just run to the studio and paint and not worry about what I am doing, just enjoy the process, would be definitely Sandy Hester on YouTube and also Helen Wells, who both create really loose, free, colourful, energetic artwork, which always gives me a little bit of a creative boost. So something like that can be encouraging, but you've got to get into the studio or wherever you make art. Of course, not everyone has a studio, but wherever it is, dining table, corner of the room, you just need to get that spark. And when you feel it, run. Run, grab stuff, get excited about it. So get something going. And then once you've done it for a while, and you might need to do this for a few months, just try different things. Don't rush the process of choosing something. But if you do want to get some good momentum going, my suggestion would be to find something that feels interesting and fun. So in all that playing, is there something that kind of got your attention? And just make a small series based on that. So choose one idea and create perhaps 10 pieces based on that. So if you are enjoying collage, or perhaps you've been playing with watercolor, florals, or something like that, and you're enjoying it, before you move on to the next thing, just create a small series. So work in the same way. Get a rhythm to it. And that way, it doesn't take you so long to get started. You're not using up energy with a lot of decision-making and changing your process. And it's will enable you to more quickly create more work, and that work will then feed into the momentum that you are craving. And I talk about this from very recent experience because that is essentially what I have just done. So we took a bit of a break from the podcast I have been bouncing around this year. So the bit that I just talked about where you might find yourself doing a million different things, I have been doing that since we moved into the new studio, which is not very new anymore. And then I decided that it was time to make a commitment, and I chose a type of painting, a style of painting, materials, size of paper, process that I was using. And I made a bunch of paintings in that same way. And that was really, really fun. And that's when things started to get that momentum and that flow state. And it's because I knew exactly what I wanted to do. Not exactly. I knew how to easily enter my art process. And once I got a couple of paintings in and I had a clearer idea about what I was doing and what this process involved. So I was doing some abstracts based on things that I had seen on my walks because I've been walking the dog a lot. Super simple concept, just bringing an idea in and painting quite loosely and abstracting something that I'd seen in nature or a feeling that I'd had in nature using a combination of watercolor and acrylic paint. So once I had that idea and I'd done a couple and I was like, yeah, you know what? I'm loving this. I'm going to do more of these. I then took not a long time, but maybe in a half an hour, an hour to establish my workspace to support the process that I had chosen to focus on. So this didn't happen straight away. As I said, I'd painted a couple of paintings in this particular style and process. And then I realized that I wanted to make it really easy for me when I came into the studio. So I put some other stuff away. I laid out my table. I got the paper that I'd be using ready. I got the supplies that I felt like I would be calling on the most. And I laid them out next to me on either side. I got a towel. I just made everything really accessible on the table. And I got my trolleys. So I have these IKEA trolleys that I use to store my acrylic paints. And I had them over by my easel, but I brought them over to the table and I put them next to the table. So I had these paints. And then what I found that I was doing, which is a little bit different to what I'd been doing before, is that I was actually just dipping my brush into tubs of acrylic paint and adding the paint to the paper and kind of mixing the colors on the paper rather than on a palette. And I was loving the speed of this because I wasn't spending time mixing colors meticulously on a paint palette. I was just sort of just mixing them on the page. Now, I will give you a warning. If you do this, your paint pots get contaminated. So if you're reaching in and you're just dabbing a little bit of red from one pot and then a little bit of yellow from another pot, and then they get messy. And some people are like, oh my God, I can't handle that. That's a no-go zone, but it's not for me. So I started doing this and I loved it so much that I actually went and purchased more paints in pots because I had a lot in tubes. I purchased some golden acrylic paints just in the tubs. And that has been such a fantastic process and I guess a way of working that I've really enjoyed. So these are the little things that can make a difference. So what I did was I brought that trolley in, I filled it with tubs of paint that I could easily just dip my brushes into. Now, if you wanted to take that a step further, you could mix your own colours, which would be great. So you don't have to contaminate your paints. You could mix a whole lot of tubs of custom colours. But I made another decision, and that was to purchase some colours that I don't normally buy because I can mix them myself. So golden has a colour like light magenta, which is basically magenta just mixed with white. It has some other colours like that where I've always thought, oh, I won't bother buying that. But I bought that because one of the things that I wanted to do was eliminate the amount of time that I was spending mixing paints because I wanted to maximize the painting time, and because I was doing the painting in short bursts while our puppy was napping, I just wanted to make the process as easy as possible. So I bought some paint colours that are pre-mixed colours. So these are just all things that have helped in my situation and in this latest burst of painting. And so once you set up your space, you can just think about like what are some things that would make this process really easy. So things that spring to mind are if you are using collage, how could you organize your collage papers so that they are perhaps arranged according to color or pattern in little piles, or maybe have some kind of system, plastic sleeves maybe with the collage papers in, and are they just next to you? Sometimes when I'm working in my sketchbook, I use a glue stick instead of using gel medium just because it's easy. I can quickly stick something down. So these sorts of things are all about getting you making art quicker and removing the barriers, removing things that make you feel like, oh, it's going to be too hard. It's going to take up too much time. So if you are feeling like, oh, mixing all my colours, by the time I mix all my colours, the hour will be gone. You know, by the time I grab those collage papers or figure out where they are, I won't have much time left. If you make things ready for you so that you know what you're doing and can quickly access things and you tweak your process to suit you, it's going to help with getting into a good flow. We want to remove those friction points, those things that make us not bother, and make things as easy as possible. And then once you are in a painting process, you get excited about what could possibly come next. So I've been working on these paintings in a certain way, and once you've done a bunch of them, you might think to yourself, what if I added in collage into this process? And so then you have your next idea and you have your next 10 paintings. And from there, it just becomes this beautiful flow of art. And then it's about protecting your creative time because you know how to do it. You know how to get into the process. Now it's about just making sure that you keep the momentum going and that you have some kind of consistency in the way that you approach your art practice. And that can be tough, but we did do an episode about that. It's a great episode. It's called Making Time for, I can't remember what it's called, but I will link it in the description. It's something to do with making time for your art. And we talk a lot about managing your energy and protecting your creative time, having good boundaries around it. So that would tie in really well with this conversation. So I just wanted to bring up a couple of the things that you mentioned last week, which really stuck with me because when you said them, I realized that that had been something that had helped me in this last burst of painting. Sorry, I should really say what I'm talking about so this makes sense. but you talked about getting into a flow state and you were mentioning it from the point of view of an athlete. And there were two things that you said, which I loved. I love them so much. I want to say them again in this podcast. The first one was that you need risk. And it's something that doesn't spring to mind as an ingredient for flow state straight away because you think, oh, I need to follow a process or I need to find something that I can replicate or I need a great teacher. And those things are all good. But risk is what makes a process exciting. And that's what makes you go to bed at night and think, oh my gosh, I want to get up and go into the studio and see what happened to that paint when it dried overnight. And I'm saying that as an example because I literally just did that. So yesterday I was working on some more paintings on paper and I left them to dry last night. And before I came into our office area, I went into the studio just to have a look. And I'd taken some risks with those paintings. I'd applied the paint differently and I was excited to get in and see what the outcome was. I wasn't following anyone else's process. I wasn't trying to do something in a certain way. I was taking risks. And this is very important in a creative process. And I see this with my students sometimes because naturally when you take an online class, you are following instructions. You're seeing a step-by-step process. And while that is great, I mean, I share plenty of online classes and I think they're brilliant for getting your creativity going. One of the problems with an online class is that you are following along with a process and you are in your thinking mind. And so because of that, you're not really engaging the part of your mind that takes risks because you're looking at someone demonstrating and thinking to yourself, how did she do that? What brush did she use? What color did she put there? And what you haven't engaged is the risk-taking that often takes your art to the very next level. Now, the great thing about an online class is that you can start with that, get to know the process, and then do the same exercise again and bring in risk. And I can tell you now, the difference will be amazing because I often see this with my students. They do the first one and it feels a little bit tight, stilted, and they feel a bit kind of like, about it. And then I say to them, do it again. Do it again and allow your intuition to come in. Take some risks. Do something different to what I did. They do it again and they bring in something that's personal to them. They do something bold. And then they come back and they say, oh my gosh, I'm so much happier with the second one.
I'm nodding my head furiously here. I'm not going to talk about it in a sports context. I'll talk about it in an art context. We talk about every single interview we've done with an artist, we've talked about style, or you've talked about style. And you cannot find your own unique style without crazy amounts of risk. Just can't do it. And you just said right there, you know, do it again, put your own personal touch to it. That's exactly how you find a style, your style, with risk.
Yeah, and that's why I would recommend doing a process again and again. So picking something and deciding, okay, I'm going to make these paintings, make 10 of them, and each time take different risks. Use it as a learning experience. What happens if I add this color? What if I do it in a different order? So you're using the same concept, but you are taking all these different risks with each painting, which makes each painting incredibly enlightening, but also enjoyable because risk, we like risk. We like to not know what's going to happen. It's what fires us up. It's what makes us excited. We don't want everything to be the same. We don't want everything to be controlled. We don't just want to copy and emulate something in front of us. We want to do it in our own way. Now, certainly we can have something in front of us and be painting it, and we can be painting in a realistic style if we want to, but there's always going to be a personal approach, a way that you use your brush, a way that you use line, a way that you use color. There will always be something that is personal to you. And it's through this process that you tap into that. And that's exciting. And then when you start making those discoveries, you are fueled by that to continue painting and to continue working. And without that, it can feel like a job to do, rather than an exciting path of discovery.
And because we're talking about flow and flow state, I just want to remind you and whoever's listening that taking a risk doesn't mean you're writing something off. Taking a risk is, I love the direction this painting is going in, but I'm going to try this new technique. And it could be disastrous or it could be a crazy payoff. And I won't know until tomorrow, until it's all dried. That's an awesome risk. Making a mistake on a painting and then hating it and saying, oh, okay, I'll try this technique now. It's not the same. It's not the same because you've written one painting off and now you're going to try a technique. Now, there's value in both of those. One is practice, which is great, but another one is risk, proper risk. And yeah, just differentiate between the two. Don't go crazy and start taking risks left, right, and center. Did I make sense there?
Yeah, you made perfect sense. And I was thinking about it and applying it into my own painting practice as you were saying it. And I do love the idea of taking like a proper risk. And almost every painting that I have been really happy with in the end has involved some kind of big move or decision right at the end of the process that feels scary at the time. And sometimes I do it in my classes and I get comments from my student going, oh my God, I can barely watch. You've spent all these layers building a painting up and then in the last layer, you just bring in something like a massive, big, dark section or a huge bold mark or a big shape, or you cover something up or you splash all over it. But they are almost always the paintings that I absolutely love. And usually when I get to the end of a painting process, I get this feeling like I know that I'm playing it safe, that I've got too cautious, that I really do need to do something bolder and bigger and scale it up, either the size or the change the color, bring in some more contrast. It's usually what a painting might need at the end. So definitely love that. I love the idea of taking a proper risk and knowing that it might pay off or it might not and just getting more comfortable with that as an artist. The second thing that you mentioned was when you kind of you feel like you've ruined a painting and then you're like, well, what the heck? What have I got to lose? And this is, as you said, still good. But I realized as you were talking about it that the ones that I love, the pieces that I really have felt amazing about, have usually been more in that first category rather than the second one. Because sometimes in the second one, that feeling of it doesn't matter sometimes brings in a little bit of carelessness or even recklessness rather than a beautiful, bold decision. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense, but don't ignore the amazing beauty of a redemption arc. So you make a mistake, you say, oh, I'm after ruining that. And then you then practice on it, for example. And then all of a sudden you're falling back in love with it again. And now you're back to risk. So don't, what I'm trying to say is don't ever write anything off. Never fall out of love with the redemption arc. Some paintings you're never going to save, like never. And not every single painting that you take a risk with is going to work because if you were to have a 40% strike rate with your risk taking, that's like a crazy high percentage of success.
Yeah, because we have to remember what risk is. It's a risk.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it is.
And failure is guaranteed, almost guaranteed.
Yeah. You've made some brilliant points and it makes me think about the episode we did about old work and how earlier this year I was spending some time just reworking old paintings, which is exactly what you are saying, that, you know, nothing is a waste. You can always come back in and it might be years later and it can still turn into a painting that you absolutely love. So yeah, there's no right or wrong. It's just different approaches at different times. And then the second thing that you talked about was that we need something that is, I think you might have worded it a bit differently, but basically you were saying that it needs to be hard but not too hard.
Yeah, it can't be easy because it won't engage us enough, and it can't be impossible because we won't believe we can get there. It has to be difficult enough for us where the outcome of failure is very, very real.
Yeah, because if you started a project and it was something really simple. Let's say you decided that you were going to get back into art and you were going to swatch out all your colors and do that for a while. Like, you're going to get bored of that pretty quickly. Like, if you're doing something that you do need that element of it could go wrong, it could go right. like it needs to be able to get interesting, doesn't it?
Yeah, the best example I could give you is if you said to me, Richie, I want you to draw an apple, and you gave me an apple, and you said to me, right, listen, I want it to look exactly like that apple. I would attempt to draw that apple perfectly for you, and I would never, ever achieve flow state because I know that I don't have the skill to do it. I'll attempt it, but I'll never achieve flow state. If you were to say to me, just draw the outline of the apple, don't fill it in, don't do anything, then I could do that and I wouldn't achieve flow state because it'd be too easy for me. But if you were to say to me, I want you to be able to draw this apple and I want you to draw 10 apples every day for a month and then I'll come back. At some stage of the process, probably in the third week, I'll start falling into flow state when I'm doing my apples.
Yes, that's a really good example.
Does it make sense to you?
Yeah, it does make sense.
I'm just trying to take it from a sporting context into an art context.
I was going to say, my example wasn't very good. I was struggling to come up with an example. But you want something that's kind of...
challenging.
Yeah.
Is the best way I could put it.
You know, something that has got a bit of juice to it that you can get stuck into. So if you were asked to draw apples, but you had some different options on how you could draw those apples and you were going to draw those apples every day, then you would have a chance to experiment in that process. Whereas if you had been told, okay, you just have to do the outline, this supply only or something like that, you're going to get quite bored of that quickly. I mean, some people would probably be able to find a creative approach with that. But on the other hand, if you were told this has to be super, super realistic and you have to do it this way, that's going to be really hard if you haven't got any drawing experience. So somewhere in the middle where you can get creative with how you approach your apples and maybe bring in a few different supplies, but you still have this theme that you're working on, that's a really great place to operate from.
See, what would happen is I would have failed miserably in the first week. I'd have failed miserably in the second week. And then somewhere in the third week, I'd have had success. And then I would have failed again. And then I might have had a little bit of success and I would have failed again. So now the risk is there. I know I can do this if I really concentrate hard. And then, so I know I can do it, but it's difficult. The chances are I'm going to fail because I failed so many times in the last 3 weeks. But I know I can do it. I know what the apple looks like. I can visualize it in my head. I think about it before I start. I dream about it on the way home. I'm constantly thinking about it. And then, without me knowing, I will sit down. I'll put some music on. I'll be taken completely out of where I am. And I will fall into a flow state. But again, we have to remember, we cannot outperform our own self-belief. I have to know I can do that.
Yeah, because I think so many people fail because they approach their art practice from either end. It's too easy or it's too hard. They want to be a masterful painter right from the get-go. And they don't realize that there's this middle section where we need to live for a long time and it needs to be challenging and we need to fail and it's going to be messy. But that is the zone of expansion and growth.
Yeah.
And if we go into it and go, oh, I want to get back into painting, we go look on Pinterest or something, we find some beautiful inspiration, artists that have been working for decades to achieve that. And we say, oh, I want to paint like that.
I used to teach swimming when I was in my late teens. I was doing a course on sports science and coaching. And I was a young man and I used to teach kids how to swim. And one day a lady asked me to cover her to teach the adults. You say to a child, put your face in the water and blow bubbles. And they'll put their face in the water and they'll blow bubbles. Or they'll say, I'm scared. So you'll help them put their face in the water and they'll blow bubbles. You say to an adult who can't swim, We're going to put our face in the water and we're going to blow bubbles. Oh, what if it gets in my eyes? What if it goes up my nose? I can't blow bubbles. Do I have to put my face in the water? There's a million questions coming back at you. And I find that in everything an adult does. You do it. You stand in front of a painting or a blank canvas and you ask yourself a million questions before you just go splat. But the second you go splat, off you go. And it's what you were just talking about, just start. So adults, we're really, really hard on ourselves. What if this happens? What if I do that? Maybe if I can't. And yeah, we need to stop asking ourselves those questions.
Yeah, we do have to try and tap into how we approach things as a child, just getting stuck in, trying things out, natural curiosity, and get out of our own way. Because we will put up a million reasons and excuses and doubts. And if we listen to that, we won't get anything on the page. So that's the first step. It's just to start. Start with something and don't be too particular about what you start with. It doesn't really matter. I started my art journey painting or art journaling whimsical characters, nothing like what I do now. The type of things that you might see in children's picture books, just cute characters. I remember doing my very first painting, I think I did of like quirky fish, like just little quirky fish characters and stuff like that. But it was just a starting point. And from there you learn about color, you learn about different artists, you see things. So I don't think it really matters too much where you start or what you start with. I don't think it matters too much about having all the perfect conditions, having the right space or materials. I mean, we could have approached this conversation with that, you know, what are the perfect ingredients for getting into a flow state? And I could have said, oh, you know, you put your favorite podcast on and you put your music on. And yeah, these things are all lovely and I do enjoy them. But I don't think that's what you necessarily need. They are like the cherry on the top. But what you need is a spark, just a spark. And if we are out there living our life, getting out in our neighborhood, going to things, talking to people, reading books, watching things, there's a spark out there waiting for you. And just heed the call. Heed the call.
When you were talking about sparks and just starting, like I was thinking of George Lucas, when he made Star Wars. It was just a crazy thought that came into my head. He was inspired by Herbert's Dune and the movie The Seven Samurai. And imagine he said to himself, oh, well, Herbert wrote it. And The Seven Samurai was a movie already made. So there's like absolutely no point in me making this movie. He'd never have made that Star Wars movie. He had a spark of inspiration that came from two separate places and he just ran with it.
That's another thing I would say. Don't worry about it having to be super unique and original. Don't think, oh, that's already been done. I'm not going to do that. That's a waste of time. Just get the ideas out because as we talked about earlier in this episode, your personal stamp will start to come through. Even if you are drawing inspiration from someone else, like that's how creativity works. We're all inspired by other people and ideas and books and songs and things we consume. And if we were to worry too much about having to start with this perfect and original idea, we just wouldn't get started. So I wouldn't spend time on framing up your idea, especially if you've had a big break. I would just pick something and perhaps try and focus on something where you don't need a lot of stuff, like that you don't need to spend money on expensive materials. You don't need a huge amount of space because if you are worrying about the cost of your materials or moving things around too much in your home, you're creating barriers. And what you really want to do is try and free up your mind, feel really good about what you are doing. You want it to be full of positive energy. So starting with cheaper materials, simple workspace, I think that's a good place to start. You often hear about novelists that were writing on the back of, old notebooks in cafes, and, you know, it wasn't a perfect situation, but they had an idea and they ran with it.
You've often spoken about, you know, the fear of the blank canvas. And I always used to think to myself, how can you be afraid of a blank canvas? Like, I don't understand that, because I'm not an artist. Like, I don't paint. But now, after spending so much time with you in this business, I understand the trepidation you have. Is trepidation the right word?
Yeah.
Of standing in front of something blank and being so hard on yourself that you want this to be perfect. You have an idea of what you want to paint. And then the hesitation to just start. But having this conversation with you now, I'm just thinking, my God, the battle just to get on front of the canvas, to be standing there in order to be afraid of it, is a battle. You know, organizing your time, your supplies, like, there's so much going on. So when you do manage to get in front of that blank canvas, remember, you've done so much to get there. Just go.
Yeah, that just made me think about this recent burst of painting that I did and some of the decisions that I made that helped. And one of them was to work on paper. So I pulled myself away from the canvases that I had been wrestling with and starting to feel a bit lost around the direction of them. And I got back to just working on paper. And I actually picked up some paper that's a little bit cheaper than what I normally work on. So I often work on Archer's paper, which is 100% cotton, cold press, watercolor paper, one of the most expensive papers that you can buy. And I ended up buying a paper from Fabriano, which is a student grade paper. And it's been amazing. Like, I've been loving working on it. It's still a good quality, but it's 25% cotton rather than 100% cotton. It's actually hot press, which is different to what I normally work on. But again, I've been loving the feel of that paper. And I also bought a sketchbook. And it's a bigger sketchbook than what I've been working in. And it has a lot of pages in it. And again, it just feels abundant. It feels like I can just have fun in it. I don't need to worry. There's plenty of pages. It all helps because you don't have this fear of messing up a canvas or using up expensive supplies. I also got some watercolor paints that are much more affordable than the Daniel Smith watercolors that I usually use. So I got this big set of Kuretake Gansai, I think is the name of the watercolors. And they're a bit more gouache-like and they have a lot of mixed colors. So similar to what I was talking about with the tubs of acrylic paint, I got some beautiful colors that I could just quickly access without having to mix. And that's been really great, but again, a much more affordable set of paints, so I didn't have to worry too much about using up expensive materials. So that's something I would factor in as well. So I think that's where we should leave this episode. I hope it's been inspiring for everyone who's been listening. It certainly has me super inspired. I want to get back into my studio because I'm working on another set of paintings. So I am in the midst of this flow state at the moment that we have been talking about in this episode. So I hope that it provides encouragement for anyone who is listening to know that they can also tap into their creativity when they want to. So as always, I will just mention that you can find me on Instagram at Laura Horn Art. You can check out what I've been up to. You can also head over to our website, laurahornart.com. All sorts of resources and things over there that might be helpful and interesting to you in your creative life.